Well, now to end our program, a lovely reflection on a culture that normally doesn't attract special attention, Holland, or the Netherlands, as our guest Ben Coates will tell us, is the more correct term. A place half the size of Scotland, boasting just 17 million citizens, that claims to have invented the DVD, the dialysis machine, the tape recorder, the CD, the energy-saving light bulb, the pendulum, the donut, gold, and the telescope. Ben's a Brit who sort of fell into Dutch life, and he's written about it with love but also scrutiny and some incredible humour. The epilogue of his book, Why the Dutch Are Different, is truly one of the funniest pieces of writing I've ever read about adapting back to one's own land after living elsewhere. We've just had the Dutch King and Queen visiting, of course, people from the House of Orange, to celebrate 400 years since Dutch explorer Dirk Hartog set foot on Australian soil in northwest Australia. And indeed, Ben starts his romp through the quirks and specifics about Dutch customs and attitudes, with the eccentricities accompanying King Willem Alexander's first day at work, as it were, after his mother Beatrix abdicated. It was 2013, and the Dutch capital had been hit by a serious outbreak of what the locals call oingevoorts, I hope that's right, or orange fever, a non-fatal disease whose chief symptom was the urge to cover oneself from head to toe in bright orange clothing. Look, it's all part of this hidden superpower, he suggests, and I welcome him now. Ben, good morning.
Hello, hi, thanks for having me.
A hidden human superpower, why did you put it like that?
Well, I think the Netherlands, as you alluded to in the introduction, there's something slightly strange about it in the sense that it's this very small country that had a huge impact on the world. It seems like everywhere you travel, you always meet Dutch people, and the people you meet always know about the Netherlands and have a positive view of it. But at the same time, it's a country that I think a lot of us don't actually know very much about. People who would know all about Donald Trump's love life or French politics or the history of Germany could easily go and sit down next to the King of the Netherlands in the pub and not realise who he was. So in some ways, this book's an attempt to fix that, to try and answer some of the questions people have and dig into some of the clichés that are so well known, the bicycles, the windmills, the clogs, those kind of things, and see what the truth behind those really is.
And yet you also say that, in a sense, it's a microcosm of the challenges facing a post-industrial world on the edge of enormous apparent climate change.
Yeah, I think that's true. The Netherlands, for a lot of the last century, I mean, with the notable exception of the Second World War, but certainly since the war, has seemed fairly insulated from history in lots of ways. They had an unprecedented run of economic growth, very low crime rates, very cohesive society, very environmentally friendly, all these kind of positive things. And in the last 10 to 15 years, that seems to have suddenly started running into trouble a little bit. And they had the assassination of a couple of famous political leaders, the economy's hit the rocks, crime rates are rising, lots of tensions around immigration and terrorism and asylum and those kind of issues. And so, yeah, as you alluded to, it's in some ways a microcosm for these challenges that are facing the world at large.
And in fact, the Dutch are relaxed, as you say, have been relaxed about almost everything. And I think they thought they'd created a perfect society. A lot of people did. Do you think they have?
I think in many ways they've created an excellent society, and the book is very positive about lots of those things. And as I said, the crime rates are very low, the children are very happy, the education and healthcare systems are excellent. So in many ways it's an ideal to strive to. But also, as I said, it's running into some problems at the moment. And I think one of the interesting things actually is that at a time when, at least before the election of Donald Trump, it seemed like a lot of the rest of the world might be swinging in a Dutch direction, so to speak. Things like legalizing the use of cannabis, moving towards legalizing gay marriage, stronger policies on climate change. A lot of the world going Dutch, it seems. At the same time, the Dutch have been rather swinging in the opposite direction. And in the last 5 years or so, you've seen hundreds of brothels closing in Amsterdam, laws about drug use being seriously tightened, new restrictions on immigration, and in many ways it's becoming a much more conservative country than it has been in the past.
Well, you write in your very funny epilogue, politically living in the most liberal country in Europe, but in some ways had made you more conservative.
Well, that's true, and that's something I talk about a lot in the book. Before I moved to the Netherlands, I worked for about 5 years for the Conservative Party in the UK. So I think I naturally approached the Netherlands with certain ideas. I wasn't a terribly right-wing conservative, but certain ideas about what works and what doesn't work in society. And in many ways, living there upended those. And I think things that I assumed, like that having legalized drug use would automatically lead to social breakdown and high crime rates, have been proved not to be the case. But then in other ways, I think seeing some of these challenges and seeing, for example, the way the Dutch have dealt with the issue of immigration and with how to integrate people moving to the Netherlands from other countries, I think it's fair to say, haven't done a great job of that and have had some problems as a result. In some ways, it's made me more conservative.
Fascinating. It's also, as one sociologist put it, the 21st century Netherlands has become one nation without God. I think it was in the last census, a notable tipping point, and the number of atheists in the country exceeded the number of people who believed in some form of God.
Yeah, and that's another major shift in the last 10 or 20 years, I think, where for a long time, a lot of its history, the Netherlands was actually a fairly conservative religious place. The Catholic Church in particular played a big role in government and politics. There were religious political parties. People would attend a certain school or go to a certain hospital or university depending on their religious affiliation. And in the last few decades, you've seen that start to crumble really quite rapidly, to the point where, as you say, a lot of people now have no religion. And also a lot of people have other religions coming from other countries. A very large number of Muslims in places like Rotterdam, where I live, which has created its own tensions in some ways.
In fact, there are a couple of things I should ask you about the Netherlands. Why you say it's more accurate to talk about the Netherlands than it is about Holland?
Yes, well, this is a common mistake, is that technically Holland is actually only part of the Netherlands, and so referring to the whole country as Holland is a little bit like saying New South Wales when you actually mean the whole of Australia. Although I have to say, I think it's a forgivable mistake because the Dutch themselves do it quite often as well.
In fact, well, the big divide between the Catholic South and the Protestant North, which I knew about, but you do flesh that out in vivid detail. Did that quite take you by surprise?
Yes, it did. And I think partly because coming to the Netherlands as an outsider, I had this view that it was a sort of very liberal, tolerant, 21st century kind of place where religion didn't play much role and where people were mostly happily atheist and liberal and so on. And it was something of a surprise to find that there's still a lot of the culture is still shaped by these religious forces. There's still a Dutch Bible Belt, as they call it, running through the middle of the country where there's fairly staunch Protestant Christians who have some fairly strong views about government policy and so on. A lot of Catholics in the south, as you say, and it's still a country that, despite this decline in religion, is still quite strongly shaped by those forces.
And the Catholics in the south have these amazing festivals, which the sort of they're wild and hilarious by the sound of it. And the northerners sort of come down and deign to come down, and they deign to have them, and then they send them back.
Yes, exactly, and that's one of my favourite things as an honorary northerner living in the northern half of the Netherlands, is to travel down to the south once a year and go to the carnival, they call it, which is the sort of local equivalent of Rio's Mardi Gras, I suppose, the once a year big Lent blowout before Easter. And that's definitely still a big part of the culture in the south, and another one of the ways in which this country, which even though it's such a small place, is actually within it very divided and has very strong regional traditions and even different languages in different parts of the Netherlands, and has all these different voices and flavours within it.
Maybe just in the couple of minutes we have left, we might just end with that, though, because you try to puncture, I think, quite a lot of myths that you certainly had and you suggest a lot of people have. One of which, well, that they have this great sense, a bit like Australians, where they revere their green heart, I think you call it. But in fact, just like we revere the bush, but we actually live on the coast, they actually don't necessarily abide. It's not a true representation of the modern Netherlands.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right, and that is definitely another parallel with Australia and probably with lots of other countries, is that the Dutch have this image of themselves as a country that's full of green fields and dairy cows and beautiful countryside and hardworking farmers, but actually it's a small country with millions of people crammed into it. It's one of the most densely populated countries in the world. It has by far Europe's biggest port and industrial area in Rotterdam, has one of the world's biggest airports in Amsterdam. It has this huge amount of heavy industry squeezed into the northern coastline, a major gas and oil industry in the north. And so this idea that it's a sort of green, eco-friendly paradise where everyone cycles everywhere and does all their recycling religiously is unfortunately a little bit of a fantasy, and it's actually got a worse environmental record than a lot of other
Yes, you say it's not particularly eco-friendly.
Yes, which was a great surprise to me. But if you look at the things like the CO2 emissions and the targets for reducing emissions that aren't being met, its record is, I mean, I should say it's not at all a shameful, bad record, but it's definitely not something that fits with the cliche or the stereotype about the Netherlands.
No, because nature was seen as, because of all the floods and the reclamation nation that it became, which we didn't have a time to talk about, seen as a menace to be tamed. Look, it's very, very interesting and well done. It's beautifully written, Ben. So thank you so much for your time today. I hope you continue enjoying living in the Netherlands.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And Ben's book is called Why the Dutch Are Different, Into the Hidden Heart of the Netherlands, where he talks about its language, for instance, sounding like a drunk man gargling soup, and his descriptions of going back to the UK and comparing and contrasting are really quite wonderful. It's a Hachette publication. I think you would enjoy it.